Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. Today's show, as I said on Wednesday, is a tape show, so we will not be taking any phone calls today. I have United States Senator Dan Sullivan in the studio with me. How you doing,
Hello,
sir?
Hello, David. Great to be back in Fairbanks on a nice snowy day.
Did you bring this weather, sir?
No, I love Fairbanks, as you know. And
you know, if you're going to come to Fairbanks, this is the full Monty.
This is great, right? It's not so cold, though, right? With nice snow. It's great.
You know,
beautiful. Beautiful.
You just came in from Juneau,
mm-hmm.
and you addressed the state legislature
yes,
there.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's a speech that you give annually.
Correct.
But it addresses your thoughts, your passions, your direction for Alaska, and your dreams. You want to go over those for us?
Yeah, I do. And thank you for asking, because it is a big speech that I give. Senator Murkowski and I are asked to address the legislature. It's kind of our, you know, laying out what we're working on. It's also a little bit of what I would call Alaska's version of prime minister time, because you end up taking Q&A from the Alaska legislature, the House members and the state senators. So
you're in the box and they're asking
questions.
You're
kind of in the box. Yeah. It can be a little sporty, but it's fun. And so what I talked about was what I called the Alaska comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, hey, what are we coming back from? Well, we're coming back from the 4 years of the Biden administration, including part of that time, Schumer was the Senate Majority Leader, and that was the last frontier lockup. We've talked about it a lot on your program before, but it's the 70 executive orders and executive actions the Biden administration took to exclusively and singularly focus on Alaska, to shut us down. No state got abused the way we did.
Nothing ever happened like that in United States history.
I think that's exactly right. And as I said in my speech yesterday, the federal government, especially in a state like Alaska, where they own so much land, has so much power. And when they concentrate that power to keep the people down and to hurt the economy and hurt opportunities, it is devastating. And it was devastating, as you know, David. So and the jobs that they killed and really tried to kill. So it was all about, hey, we're coming back from that. Now, we still have challenges. Working families still have high prices. We have the, you know, you had the Biden inflation that was unleashed for 4 years. You can't come over that in just a very quick amount of time. You can't get over that. But overall, my focus was one of optimism in this idea of a comeback. And I said the comeback is being driven by two things. First, and we've talked about this too, is the day one executive order from the Trump administration trying to reverse what Biden did to us, called Unleashing Alaska's Extraordinary Resource Potential. We're the only state in the country that has our own executive order. And this EO is very detailed. My team and I worked on a lot of it. We wrote a lot of it. It essentially says to federal agencies, which is really important, the American people, American businesses, the world, hey, Alaska's open for business. We want to help them. We want to unleash them. We want to create jobs. That's a great signal. By the way, it talks about the Alaska LNG project as a priority of the Trump administration in that executive order. But probably even more important than that, David, was the Working Families Tax Cuts Act. We've talked about this too on the show.
Yep.
We've named it a couple things that used to be called the One Big Beautiful Bill. Never liked that name because it makes no sense. What does that even mean? But this
it
is about...
It means a lot of everything we need in one bill.
That's true. It does have a lot of great stuff in it for Alaska. I like to call this bill the Alaska Opportunity Act, but it's officially now called the Working Families Tax Cuts Act because it's got tax cuts for working families. But the one thing that Democrats and Republicans in D.C. do agree on is that no state did better than the state of Alaska in this bill. This bill has so much in it for our great state.
And, Senator, that's why I want to personally thank you.
Yeah.
That's your relationship. It wasn't Senator Murkowski. I like her, think the world of her. That was your relationship from the past administration of Trump to this one, carrying forward. That was you. That was not your opponent.
Oh, no.
That was you. So
well,
thank you.
Well, I appreciate
you.
That. And look, it's a team effort, right? Senator Murkowski and her team played a very important role. We worked with the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's the relationship with all the U.S. senators, and it's the Republican senators,
yeah.
right? When I've gone to all my colleagues, hey, I need this. My state needs this. We have unique opportunities here that we need help on. We have unique challenges. My Republican colleagues are always like, Roger that, Dan. We love Alaska. We'll help. Same with this administration. Now, I did say in my speech that we have all these opportunities. The big comeback ideas I talked about were the resource development boom going on the North Slope, which mm-hmm. is undeniable,
yeah.
right? We're now talking finally about bending the TAPS decline curve, going north. DNR is even talking about a high-end estimate by 2033, 34 of close to 1 million barrels a day. You might remember
wow.
when I was a DNR commissioner, yeah. I put together a big comprehensive plan, 1 million barrels a day, got ridiculed by a lot of the members of the legislature down there. Well, I don't think they're ridiculing it anymore. I certainly hope not, because this is a goal. This is ambition. This is optimism, and this is a comeback. So you got that comeback. The gas line, we're not there yet, but I will tell you this, David. I've been working on this for years, way before I was a U.S. senator. We've never made more progress.
I was just thinking, we've never been
never
this close.
Never gotten this far.
Yeah, never.
And I did tell the legislature, and we can talk about what we're doing, which is a lot. I'm working on this daily. But I told them, hey, be bold. Join
yeah.
me. Let's do everything in our power to get this over the goal line. Why wouldn't we? The alternative, and again, there's naysayers out there. They're always like, sure, we'll never make it. This is impossible. But the alternative is what? Importing gas from Mexico and Canada?
That's our alternative. That's why I'm laughing.
Isn't that horrible?
It hurts. That's why I'm laughing. It hurts.
You are exactly right. It hurts. The biggest resource state in
the America, world.
In the world. And we're going to what? Import gas? Think about the possibilities. With the spur line, by the mm-hmm. way, whenever I talk about this, got to be a spur line to Fairbanks. The possibility of low-cost energy for 50 to 100 years, we could do anything. Manufacturing, Fairbanks would boom, data centers. So that was second thing I mentioned. The other comeback that's clearly happened, a lot of it's in the interior, is our military. You know, post-Cold War, the Pentagon thought we were a strategic backwater, forgot all about how important we were in World War II and in the Cold War. Now we have this huge multi-billion-dollar boom in the rebuilding of our Coast Guard, rebuilding of our Air Force, our Army. We just had the top Army generals, 4-star generals, here at the University of Fairbanks last night. It was great. And all the top enlisted guys. So much going on in that space. Missile defense, which, of course, is for America, is centered right here in the interior of Alaska. And then finally, healthcare. Healthcare has always been a challenge. But I wrote this Working Families Tax Cuts Act to favor dramatically our state when it came to this giant healthcare transformation fund, $50 billion fund, and our state got $1.4 billion over 5 years. It's really a great opportunity.
I don't want you to think that I'm ridiculing what you said, but our healthcare wasn't complicated before the Affordable Care Act.
That's correct.
And
Obamacare did not make health care affordable.
Once that happened, my health care costs went up 400%.
It's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And so this is, look, we have huge challenges on that. I think you can't dig out of what happened with Obamacare in terms of especially Alaska. You know, we had four health insurance providers that, when that bill became law, they all fled. There was down to one. I remember calling the HHS.
And you had to plead to keep them here.
Yeah. I called the HHS Secretary of Obama and said, hey, what are we going to do when the final one leaves Alaska? Would you have a plan for that? You guys are driving out all health insurance companies. But look, this is not going to fix everything, but this is an opportunity that people are excited about in Fairbanks, I know, because this is the first, the biggest investment in federal health care in Alaska's history, $1.4 billion over 5 years. But the exciting thing is this isn't one size fits all like Obamacare. Feds telling us what to do. This is the Fed saying to Alaska, okay, design your own program. And that's pretty exciting.
Yep. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have Senator Dan Sullivan in the studio here, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back in the studio here with Senator Dan Sullivan. Now, Senator Sullivan, you talked earlier about working with your colleagues, but there are some colleagues that work with you and some colleagues that work against Alaska's interests.
Correct.
Any thoughts, comments on how sometimes we're not treated very well?
Yeah, no, I certainly do, David. And, you know, one of the things that I talked about in my speech, so we got this Working Families Tax Cuts Act passed through it's this complicated process called the budget reconciliation process in the Senate. It's complicated in that it does allow for a 51 vote in the Senate. Mm-hmm. This is how we can get all this stuff done. It's one of the few times we're allowed to get past legislation with that those kind of numbers. But it enables senators on both sides of the aisle to go in front of the Senate parliamentarian and say, hey, we want this provision or that provision stripped out of the bill because that provision allegedly violates what's called the Byrd Rule. This is all very complicated Senate parliamentarian rulings, but you literally go in front of the Senate parliamentarian and she makes a ruling on if that provision stays in or stays out. What happened when we were putting this bill together, there were so many good things for Alaska in it. And the Senate Democrats, led by Schumer, literally went through this bill line by line. And anything that was helpful to Alaska, I mean anything, they went to the parliamentarian and challenged it. And we had to go, it's almost like going to court. Mm-hmm. And we had to go in there and fight them.
Defend it, yeah.
And I will tell you this, we got a provision in there that I've been working on for 10 years that would increase Alaska's federal match for Medicaid. We have one of the lowest mm-hmm. matches. Mm-hmm. Medicaid's a state federal program. We have one of the lowest matches in the country, even though we have the highest health care costs. I've always said this makes no sense.
I hate to interrupt, but you know what's scary for me is your opponent will be joining Schumer.
Yeah.
And think what that would do for Alaska. So I'm sorry to interrupt. But,
well, look, I mean, this
but
is
the way
a
you
really,
describe that,
this
that's
is
scary
really
for me.
An important point.
Yeah.
So what happened was on this federal match issue for Medicaid, I got it in the bill. President, his team signed off on it because it's just fair for Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Been trying to get this done for 10 years. This would have been about $200 million additional money for Alaska each year from federal Medicaid.
Yeah.
Big deal. Everybody wants it. Democrats came in. Schumer led the effort to strip that out of the bill. On that one, they won, which was a gut punch to me because we had been working on this so hard. The irony, of course, is you may have seen $4.5 million of attack ads right now
yeah.
on this bill. And me, one of the attack ads is falsely saying that this bill and I cut Medicaid for Alaska, which is not
yeah,
true.
Exactly.
Okay, but here's the truth. The only guy who cut Medicaid for Alaska, factually, was Schumer. And I said that in my speech, right? But on everything else, we got provisions for ANWR, NPRA, Cook Inlet, the Coast Guard, provisions to help our whaling captains and the North Slope communities. They went after every single one of these pro-Alaska provisions. And I was like, what in the hell are you guys doing? Like, why are you attacking us so much? We beat them on all those, mm-hmm. beat them on all of them. But it just shows you, and I laid it out in my speech yesterday. I said, look, I'm not trying to be partisan here, but Alaskans need to know who's for you, who's for us, and who's against us. Yeah. And in the U.S. Senate, Schumer is the most anti-Alaska guy. And you're right. My opponent, if she won, which she won't, her first vote would be to empower this guy and really hurt our state.
You know, what do you see as the biggest opportunities for Alaska's next generation? Like your kids. What are the best opportunities for your three incredible daughters?
Well, look, what I talked
about. They're all taller than me.
That's such a good question. I talked a lot about our kids yesterday in this speech. I talked a lot about our kids and our grandkids. And these generational opportunities, as you know, they can spur so much else. Like I said, if we get the gas line done, I mean, we could do manufacturing. We could do data centers. We could live in Fairbanks without having to pay super high energy costs.
The road to Ambler.
Ambler. I mean, there are so many things that we're not talking about anymore.
Yeah.
We're building them. The Port of Nome, we're building that. $400 million, we're building that. We're starting to build that this summer. We've designed it, phase one of the building. We're reopening ADAC, right? I mean, all these things. So there's huge opportunities right now.
You know, I have to tell you, in my mind, you know, I grew up in a time frame where I could get a great job working in resource development or construction on resource development and pay for my college, make a great wage living.
Yeah.
And I foresee that now over the next 3 to 30 years.
Yeah.
That next generation coming on, our youth generation,
yeah,
has that opportunity.
So
Chuck Schumer, don't mess it up.
And he will, man. Trust me. If he could, he will. Now, look, it's really interesting you say that because how I ended my remarks yesterday, I talked about the TAPS generation. And what do I mean by that? We all know people, and they're great Alaskans who played a role, maybe as a young, you know, operating engineer or laborer, mm-hmm, who helped build that great pipeline. And when our country needed it, that wasn't just a comeback for Alaska. That was a comeback for America. Think about it. We are down. We are kicked. The oil prices are going through the roof. The Arab oil embargo is kicking in. And Alaska's coming to save the day. We build that. And what I said yesterday, I said, being part of something bigger than yourself, right, for a big endeavor is life-changing. And I love talking to the men and women who help build the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, because to this day, they speak about it with a sense of pride, right? That, mm-hmm, hey, I was part of that. You know, we drive up to our fish camp every summer. We parallel that the whole way up the Hall Road to the Yukon. It is just a remarkable achievement. And I said, I think if we play our cards right, that this generation of young Alaskans and their kids can have that same moment of an opportunity that's bigger than themselves if they're part of the gas line, which would be the biggest infrastructure energy project in the world, if they're part of rebuilding our military and Coast Guard, if they're part of helping redesign a very challenged healthcare system, which we now have a lot of resources to do. These are all things that young people can look back on and say, hey, I was part of that. That was bigger than me, and that gives me pride as an Alaskan. And I think we're at that moment. Again, if we don't have the Democrats take control, because they are in D.C. I'm talking about, not here.
Yeah.
Right? The D.C. Democrats are very different. As I was asked this, hey, why do you think Schumer is so anti-Alaska? Because it's undeniable that he is. And my answer was, look, I know that in D.C. that the energy in the party is not Schumer. Schumer doesn't run the Democratic Party. It's the far left. It's Bernie Sanders. It's Elizabeth Warren. It's AOC. And those guys have a core tenet of their philosophy, which is to shut down Alaska, because the far left environmental groups don't want us
It's their fundraising mecca. It's their fundraising mecca. It's all about
money. You are so right about the fundraising mecca. They put out the picture of the polar bear, and the grannies in Connecticut are
writing checks.
And it's really, it's a fundraising mecca, but they do that. And then, So I said in my answer to this question yesterday in front of the legislature, and I said, so it manifests itself in other ways. When Schumer and Biden and Pelosi all had power in D.C., the one thing they did, which never got any press, they were very anti-Alaska Native Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote laws, and I would go on the Senate floor and rail against this, against ANCs, like the big COVID fund that was for all Native people in America. They had a provision saying, but if you're an ANC or a shareholder,
nope.
I mean, I'm like, wait, you can't, you're not allowed to do that anymore in America.
That's what discrimination.
I thought it was.
You guys are discriminating by race.
And it was just indigenous people, shareholders of ANCs in Alaska. It was shocking. And then to show that it wasn't a fluke, there was this big bill called the CHIPS and Science Act. I voted against that. I voted against the American Recovery Act. The CHIPS and Science Act was this huge $240 billion to Intel, to universities, to tribes, to nonprofits for helping, you know, develop chips. You know what they did? They put a provision in that one saying, but if you're an ANC in Alaska,
you don't get
any money. And I was just like, why are they doing this? And here's what I think, David. It's back to my Alaska Native Corps, think of Doyon. They want to develop their resources. Think of other ANCs. They want to develop their resources for the benefit of Alaska, their shareholders. And the far left really doesn't like that because our ANCs are developing resources. So Schumer and the Democrats have a very strong anti-Alaska Native record. And that's a fact. And I know some people don't like to hear it. I've given speeches on it. The media won't touch that with a 10-foot pole, but it's true.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials and weather. And this is a recorded show, so we're not taking phone calls. And you got Senator Sullivan in the studio with me. And we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have United States Senator Dan Sullivan in the studio with me. Now, Senator, on Wednesday, it was just me in the studio here, and I told people that you were going to be here for a recorded conversation and ask for some questions.
Sure, great.
Got a couple good ones here for you.
Sure.
And it is, we have an agreement on federal judges being appointed in states called the Blue Ticket. You, Senator Sullivan, got one of your appointments through. It seems like there's issues on the second one. Why? And be honest.
Well, look, it's the blue slip.
Yeah, the blue slip, not the blue ticket. Okay.
Yep, and the blue slip allows the home state senators to essentially veto any nominee for a judgeship.
Mm-hmm.
That can be useful. It can also be a challenge if you're not in agreement with the current occupants of the White House, or, to be honest, if you're not in agreement with your fellow senator. So I think, David, that one of the most important roles we play in the Senate is making sure that we have very good federal judges,
mm-hmm,
for our state. They have enormous power. federal judges. They have life tenure, so they're in it for the entire duration of their life if they want to.
Yeah.
And so, and they make decisions that can have enormous consequence for us. So I take that very seriously. You know, I had the great honor, and boy, oh boy, do we miss him, the great honor at an early point in my legal career to be a law clerk for the great Judge Andrew Kleinfeld,
mm-hmm.
right here in Fairbanks on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. I learned so much from Judge Kleinfeld. He was a friend, mentor. His wife was...
Judy
was amazing.
Yeah.
They have great, wonderful children who are all brilliant. Julie, my wife, and I just loved the Kleinfelds. As you know, we lost Judge Kleinfeld at the last fall, which is really hard on everybody. But I learned so much about the importance of a federal judge that follows the law, that doesn't make policy, that believes in federalism, that believes in the separation of powers. And I had just a great tutorial for over a year here in Fairbanks. One of the best jobs I ever had right here as a Ninth Circuit law clerk. We only get one Ninth Circuit judge, mm-hmm. right? And the Ninth Circuit has traditionally been very liberal and very hostile to Alaska. So I've put together as a senator a judicial council of very smart lawyers, non-lawyers, native, non-native, heck, I don't even know, I have Republicans, I have Democrats, a very good group of smart lawyers who help me through the judicial process of interviewing potential judges. And I take that really, really seriously. We just got one confirmed, Aaron Peterson,
mm-hmm.
who's going to do a great job, very serious, knows about ANILCA, knows about ANCSA, all the land issues that matter to our state so much.
Senator, you have one more to get through. Do you think you'll get it through with the Trump administration, or will it be...
I think
battered we'll between you and Senator Murkowski until this gets done.
I think we'll get it through. We got to fill an additional slot. There could be another slot too if another federal judge in Alaska retires. But it's a really important opportunity.
I hope that happens.
I hope it happens too. Look, I'll just say, you know, I'm not. There's a certain judge here. I never attack people personally, but her decisions have been
hurtful
some of those
to the state of Alaska.
Exactly.
I'll say it. Yeah, very hurtful for resource development to the state of Alaska.
Some of the most far-reaching decisions,
yeah.
And I read them all,
yep.
And they're not good. They side with the far-left environmental groups who always want to shut us down. So when I have been interviewing judges, and we've done a lot of work in this area, the knowledge of those kind of federal laws, when I'm interviewing them, when the judicial council that we set up is interviewing them, is really, really important. Because if you get, you know, an ANILCA lawsuit, and look, these lower 48 far-left environmental groups, the one thing they have, very talented lawyers, right? They bring it. So you have to have judges with the intellectual capacity to rule.
On the facts of the law.
Correct. So it's a hugely important issue. What I think will be a really important judge who just got confirmed a couple weeks ago, and that's something that we do. It doesn't make a lot of, press, but it's a very important part of the job, is making sure we get good federal district court and court of appeals judges. And I interview them all. I'll tell you one final thing on this, David. You know, when we do interview for confirmation. Ninth Circuit judges, D.C. Circuit judges, and Supreme Court justices, what I do, I give them all big, important Supreme Court cases
mm-hmm.
dealing with Alaska. So the Venati case, Sturgeon 1, Sturgeon 2, the Chehalis case, these are all pretty recent, hugely consequential cases dealing with Anilka, dealing with ANCSA, dealing with the COVID recovery bill that had provisions for Alaska Natives and American Indians. And they all involved litigation dealing with Alaska. And the Supreme Court in every one of those cases ruled in Alaska's favor. And I give those opinions to people before they meet with me. And I say, please read those Supreme Court opinions, and I'd like you to discuss them with me, because they talk about how unique Alaska is from a legal perspective. And pretty much everybody reads them, and I think they learn from them, and we discuss them. I had one judge who was a Ninth Circuit judge nominated by President Trump, came into my office. He said, I said, well, what'd you think of Sturgeon 1 and Sturgeon 2? And he's like, well, Senator, I didn't have time to read them. And I was like, that's exactly.
I just gave the thumbs, you're out of here.
That's what
you're
I mean.
Out.
I said, hey, sorry, man. I said, then I don't have time to interview you.
Yeah.
You show me some respect. Go read these cases and we'll reschedule your meeting, but I'm not going to talk to you until you do your homework, right? So a really important part of the job.
Mm-hmm. You have a setup in the U.S. Senate where to get anything to the floor vote takes 60, you know, but you can stop it. What's the term I'm looking for?
The filibuster.
Filibuster.
Correct.
And what you do now is a zombie filibuster. One person say, okay, I'm going to filibuster this, and nothing happens. You know, up until about President Wilson, I believe,
yeah,
the senator who said he was going to filibuster would have to get up and speak.
Correct.
So I believe in the 60-vote rule, because our founding fathers wanted to make sure if you passed anything, it had to be hard. And sometimes the best thing you do is stop something stupid from happening.
Correct.
So I believe in the filibuster, but are you looking at going back to the zombie filibuster, or keeping it rather, and going back to the regular
one? It's a really important question, and I think you're making two great points. There's discussion right now of kind of the zombie or the talking filibuster, and we're having that discussion, and I think it's a very legitimate discussion. There are elements of that that are a little bit that can make that a challenge, but we've had some meetings on that just in the last couple months. But I would also agree that, you know, the for Alaska in particular, the 60-vote threshold has done way more to help us than to hurt us.
And I believe you're absolutely correct.
Yeah,
I really
do. And it's kind of the point I was making earlier. For the, you know, most of the 20th century, the Democrats were in control of the Senate, right? I mean, during all the Ted Stevens years, you know, over 40-plus years when he was a U.S. senator, we were not in the majority for, you know, a good portion of that time we were in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And had you not had the filibuster, in my view, there is zero doubt, and I mean zero doubt, that what we were talking about earlier is that the National Democrats would have turned our great state into one giant national park.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. Even though the Republicans are in the majority of the Senate right now, like you said, it's over time, it's not been that way nearly enough or at all.
No.
And this is your stopgap to stop bad stuff from happening.
And you're so correct that sometimes in legislation, and heck, we've been doing it here, I guess I'm guilty of it, you talk about what you've accomplished, but a lot of what is also important is the bad stuff you've blocked.
Yeah.
And I will say that, and this is something that, trust me, I've seen, well, geez, we just talked about it. We're Senate Democrats. Because the far left of the party is where the energy is and the base is and the action is and the influence is. The far left has as a core tenet to shut down Alaska.
Yeah.
That's just been that way for decades. And so the ability to block what they want to do to our state has been really, really important. But it's essentially the dog that didn't bite, right? Because you're not... you're not passing anything. You're just blocking stuff to keep our state from being shut down. So that's a really important question.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I got U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan in the studio with me. We'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan in the studio with me here. Senator, thank you so much for coming in. The only thing that you got me mad about is you did not bring your wife in, Julie. Don't do that again.
I know. I will tell you, David, it was very nice. So Julie was with me at my speech to the Alaska legislature yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
She always goes to that speech with me, and I always introduce her. And this year I just felt the need to kind of say in a more heartfelt way, I'm not the most...
The Marine sometimes has that shield.
Yeah, I'm not the most,
yeah,
like, kind of... what's the term?
Warm, fuzzy,
guy.
Yeah.
But I did it because I'm sitting there looking at my wife in the gallery, and I said, you know, in public life, you know, one thing that I think kind of surprised me a little bit, and I'm sure you've had this similar experience, you know, family members take a little bit more incoming than you would anticipate. And they're not the one in the arena elected, but they get a lot of slings and arrows, and they get abused, and it's not easy, and they can't really respond because they're not the person, you know, who's the elected official. It can be hard on them. So I just said,
they're not Hillary Clinton.
Yes. So I just said, look, I just want to thank my wife. She's what I think the kind of person with grace, dignity, brilliance, beauty, and class that Alaskans appreciate and respect. And I said, and that's my wife. And I said it in front of everybody. And you know what? They gave her a standing ovation.
Good.
And it was very heartfelt. It was a true. And I said, geez Louise, I know you get.
I'm going to text your wife and have her listen to this show tomorrow.
Well, I said, I know you guys might not like me, but it's very clear you really like my wife. So that was very nice. So yeah, I'm sad she's not here too. And you know, boy oh boy,
don't do it.
She
again.
Loves Fairbanks.
Don't
and, you know.
Do it again.
All right, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm really
now,
sorry.
Now you had a really neat big event up at the university last night.
Yeah,
you know, it's sort of like the synergy of the United States is really focusing on Alaska.
Yeah.
Military, education, research, development, resource development.
Yeah.
I mean, and last night, it seemed like you had all the players in one location.
Well, it was really exciting. And I just want to do a shout out to, you know, the university, UAF. I mean, I'm such a big supporter. You know, there were some frozen federal grants and other things during the first year of the Trump administration. We worked really hard with the university to get pretty much everything unfrozen and then getting them more, because federal grants, as it relates to particularly a research university, as you're saying, are really important. So I am like, you know, shoulder to shoulder with the UAF and its leadership. And what we had last night, which was just beautiful at the museum, that's such a gorgeous setting. As I mentioned earlier, the top U.S. Army general, the chief of staff of the Army, the top four-star, and he's a four-star, the top four-star Army general in charge of the Indo-Pacific, the top I-Corps, one of the big corps formations, he's a three-star general, the 11th Airborne Division commander, who's based in Alaska, he's a two-star, and all their senior enlisted, all the sergeant majors, and they were there because they've been here for military exercises in the Arctic, but they also wanted, they told me, the general said, we got to collaborate more with the kind of intellectual system in Alaska, especially at the university, what they're doing, for example, in terms of drones, what they're doing, for example, in terms of kind of the geospatial issues. They just got a big award from the NGA, which is kind of one of our spy agencies that does the geospatial-ish work. So it's just a great partnership. It was so impressive to see all this top military brass. By the way, you had national news media outlets traveling with them. NBC News was there. The Washington Times was there. So it was a really good event. And I'll tell you this, it's not just relating to coordinating with the military. The University of Alaska is a finalist in this National Science Foundation grant opportunity where the NSF does these really big long-term grants. I think it's like $150 to $200 million for basic research on a big idea. And our universities put together this critical minerals accelerator idea to say, hey, we have, I think it's like 46 of the 52 critical minerals that our country says it needs. We're reliant on China for all these. We, the University of Alaska, with our partners in the mining sector, in the military, we can mine these, we can process these, and we can get off our dependence on China for these really important critical minerals that we need for our economy, for our national security. So I was honored to be asked by the university to go make the pitch to the NSF, essentially judges, who came up to Alaska a couple weeks ago, and we all got, I came in on Zoom, but we all got there, made the pitch, and we're really hopeful that we're going to get this award. It would be great for the university, great for our economy. But I talked about that last night. We have so much to offer for national security, way beyond just the military.
Let's look at national security for a moment. You're a U.S. senator. We just recently had a military excursion into Venezuela. Probably the most successful excursion you could ever have. And the president is a commander-in-chief. Simple as that. And he has the War Powers Act. If he's doing something for more than 90 days or whatever, and I don't know all the intricacies of it. But what he did there is incredible. But now we're looking at maybe Iran. And I look at something, I say to myself, when this president is putting two aircraft carriers in harm's way, and he's expecting the government of Iran to do something, and they're not doing it, I'm expecting gunshots, sadly. As a U.S. senator, how do you prepare for that?
Well, first, I think the most important thing we can do as a U.S. senator, and from my perch on the Armed Services Committee, is to make our military what we all want it to be, which is strong and lethal and ready to win wars if called upon. And I will tell you, this is another huge difference from the Democrats and Republicans back in D.C., not in Alaska, but I'm talking about back in D.C. The Biden 4 years were all about every time he would put forward a proposed cut to the military, we tried to fight that back. Schumer was always wanting to gut the military. I mean, he becomes majority leader. You can kiss readiness goodbye because he's not serious on these issues. I've watched the guy for over 10 years. And there was this lack of seriousness out of the Biden Pentagon where they, you know, I had a couple hearings with the Secretary of the Navy where he would come to our committee and he would literally, David, you can't make this up, he would make his testimony and his focus all about climate change. And here's my climate action plan. And here, I'm like, climate change? Like, you need to focus on building submarines and you need to focus on building warships. And we're way behind on all of this. And you need to be focused on increasing the lethality and ineffectiveness of our troops, not climate change.
Peace through strength.
Exactly. So we've returned to that. A serious military that's focused on serious issues. You mentioned the Venezuelan operation. I got the briefing on it. It's unbelievable heroism that you, the one thing I tell them, and same with the Iran bombing of the Iranian nuclear facility that occurred.
That needed to happen, in my mind.
Yeah. But the way in which our military carried out these hugely complex issues, it would make every American proud. Even if you didn't agree with the president on the Venezuelan op to capture the indicted drug lord Maduro or taking out the Iranian nuclear facilities, the way in which our military conducted those, planned them, operate them, it would make every Alaskan, every American proud. I've literally told the military, hey, you, these briefings, take out the top secret stuff and do these in public. The American people should see how impressive the young men and women who who are planning and conducting these operations are, and the heroism. I'll give you one example. The lead pilot in the Venezuela raid, he's got special forces in this CH-47 helicopter. He gets shot in the from ground fire in the leg three times. He's shot, and he's still flying it, lands it. I mean,
yeah. He's not stopping mission, yeah.
The guy could have bled to death.
Yeah, he's not giving up control to the right seat.
Nope. And it was just, so that kind of thing. So, but look, you mentioned it, peace through strength. I think what's going on in the Persian Gulf right now is diplomacy backed by American power. And I think that's the way you have effective diplomacy. My hope would be that the Iranians agree with the demands that the Trump administration is agreeing on, and you don't have a conflict there. But, you know, Iran has been our enemy for four decades. They have the blood of hundreds and hundreds of American service members on their hands. And having Iran with a nuclear weapon, the terrorists, because they're the number one terrorist regime, you can't allow that to happen.
Yeah. We got about a minute left, sir. How do you want to end it? Thank you so much for being on, taking the time. You know, whenever you come to the state of Alaska, I know you're busy, you're booked, and getting up to Fairbanks is wonderful. So
we love
personal
Fairbanks.
Thanks.
We
personal
love
thanks.
Well, look, we had a great day in Fairbanks. You know, one group I always love getting together with is the Laundry House Gang. By the way, I forgot the origins of the Laundry House Gang. Maybe, you know, in terms of the name.
It
sounds like something out of a book.
Group of Fairbanksons who used to meet at the Coin King Laundromat to discuss.
That's right.
You know, resource King. Development, access, the Alaskan right. issues, and that's how it started.
It sounds like
Bill
something
Hager.
Out of a Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid movie, right?
Yeah.
The Laundry House
yeah.
Gang. Anyways, but what I love about the Laundry House Gang, to your point, it's a group of great Fairbanksons, but they have so much knowledge about things like ANILCA, about things like federal rules, federal laws. Then we went to Flowline, a great Alaskan company that is doing incredible work, met with their leadership, met with some of their workers. Boy, oh boy, they're seeing a lot of
stuff.
Business, which is all about pipelines. And then we're going to head to the vet center, you know. It's always good to see our veterans. Our great state has more veterans per capita than any state in the country. A bunch of them are here in the interior, so I always like checking in with our veterans, make sure they're doing good. So can't say enough about coming to visit the great city of Fairbanks, place Julie and I, like I said, when I was working for Judge Kleinfeld, had such great memories here when we were living here and our girls. Well, we only had one girl and time. Now we got three, so it's always great to be back, David.
Senator, thank you so much for being here. Fairbanks, you have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday.